Hello and welcome to Climate Talk Uganda. I am Josephine Karunji. Today, we are continuing our look at how public health in Uganda is affected by climate change. So looking back over the episodes we've produced so far, we've covered a diverse range of subjects from rural agriculture, urban drainage and planning, to agroforestry, habitat loss and nutrition, from innovations in food storage to the particular climate change-related challenges that are faced by women. But what they all have in common is that when it comes to climate change, what is particularly difficult is that the picture is always changing. In other words, climate change is challenging to deal with because it makes predicting what's going to happen weather-wise extremely difficult. When it comes to public health, that's especially true. And today we're talking to two doctors about just that. Dr. Ian Clark, who we'll hear from in a minute. But first, Dr. David Jolly Muganzi, who is the Health Innovation Hub Manager at Clark International University here in Kampala. I asked him how he first came to focus on climate change and health.
When I was in second year of medical school, I read this book and I realized I was not going to be a regular doctor. And I had to choose what to do. And the book had said you either choose to work on the biggest problem of your time or to work with the cutting edge technology of your time. And I was like, I'll go with the problem. Mm. And I started working on climate change in 2019. I did a lot of work, started a project. We planted a couple of like 900 trees along River Rizzi. We held a lot of activities. I was in and out of the climate change department with the Ministry of, you can imagine, a young medical student doing all those things. So I was so much into it. But I reassessed after some time and I said, I think I can't do so much with the problem right now as a doctor. And I shifted to the cutting edge technology, which he mentions I'm now working on AI.
So we'll get into artificial intelligence in a moment. But first, Dr. Ian Clark, who was born in Ireland, studied medicine at Queen's University in Belfast, and became a naturalized Ugandan citizen 15 years ago.
I was a general practitioner, you know, a family doctor in the late 80s. And I heard about the HIV. And of course, one of the epicenters was Uganda, was Rakai. And the other one was San Francisco. And as events turned out, then I came to Uganda for a visit and went into the Luwero Triangle just after the war. So that was in 80. That first visit was 87. So the civil war finished in 86. Most of my work has been in healthcare. I've started, founded Chioko Hospital, which is a church hospital in Luwero. And then the International Hospital Kampala now called C-Care, IHK. And CIU, Clark International University. And now I'm actually in coffee. I have a coffee farm. I asked David to come along to this because it's a real thrill for me actually to work with young Ugandans who are much smarter than me and are going places. David actually didn't say, but a lot of his interest is artificial intelligence, the digital economy, you know, as it relates to not just healthcare, but all of those things, yeah.
So how do climate change, artificial intelligence and health intersect? Here is Dr. David Muganzi Jolly again.
Okay, let me start from the point of the way health is set up. There is prevention, yeah. There is preventive medicine, and then there is the curative medicine. So what AI is, it's a tool. It's a tool. And its greatest power is in prediction. It's mostly prediction, but it can also be used to study and create new knowledge. It can be used to understand things faster than we usually do. So use cases in climate change. The paper we published last year, working with some folks at MIT, and we're just looking at...
This is a no acronym zone.
Oh, Massachusetts. Massachusetts. Now you know why I use that.
Okay. We just call it MIT. Ivy League University, MIT.
Okay, yeah. So there's a lab there that is, they're good friends of mine. And actually, I'm working with Ian on another paper with them. And in that paper, we were investigating how AI can be used to predict adverse health outcomes following extreme weather events. And the conclusion of that paper was that actually AI can be used. For example, we know that another flood will happen in Kampala. We know that there will be another event of mudslides in Bududa. Mm-hmm. We know there will be another dry spell. But we don't know what health outcomes will happen when there's another. Like, exactly. Someone may say there may be cholera. There may be, but AI can help us know exactly how. Okay, not exactly, but it will give us
a better estimate. Yeah, better estimates and prediction.
Yeah.
In my past life, a long time ago, I was mayor of McKinty Division. You know, a lot of that job was public health, and that's my master's. My master's is in public health. And so I find myself looking at, are you talking about prediction? Looking at the common epidemics that would happen. It was cholera. And a lot of cholera in Uganda originated in Namuongo. But we knew to prevent cholera, we needed, and to prevent a lot of malaria, we wanted to get rid of the standing water. We wanted to get rid of the sewage and the garbage. So by taking those public health measures, in fact, I didn't have outbreaks of cholera when I was mayor. And we reduced the, I'm not on a political campaign, we reduced the amount of malaria as well. And so those are, you know, so in other words, human beings can predict, you don't need AI, but AI can refine those predictions further and tell you, wake up, you know, go and do this because this is going to happen. You're going to have a mudslide and this is going to cause these problems. And so there's really no excuse for a lot of the things where, oh, we were caught by surprise. It's not true. I want to go on to, you've been talking about AI, but I want to talk about the stability, the lack of stability, and how we actually rely on stability in our lives. I will illustrate it by saying that when I lived in Ireland, as a developed country, in that we had tarmac roads and predictable security and, well, we did fight each other, you know, like it was also predictable that there was, the Catholics were fighting the Protestants, leave that aside. But in most countries in the Western world, it's a fairly stable environment. And you know, in Ireland, you have sort of the mild climate, but quite a lot of rain. So, you know, in certain seasons, you'll get coughs and colds and flus and stuff and other seasons. And it's a kind of, the health service runs on, you know, a certain way. But we were saying earlier about systems. As soon as COVID hit, you know, all the systems, you know, nobody could predict anything. And all the services and the demand and all went, you know, people didn't know what to do. If you imagine climate change, the same thing. You know, you kind of predict that, oh, we'll have a malaria season at this time. We'll have, you know, there's different, doctors will kind of know according to the seasons when they'll get certain diseases. And then everything goes up in the air, you know. So if you imagine, for example, certain bacteria, they don't thrive in dry conditions. But if you've got very humid conditions, moist conditions, then those you'll get an upsurge in bacteria, which you didn't have before, or viruses, or whatever it is, or zoonoses, which are transmitted from animals. Yeah.
So you're going to help me understand this a little bit. I think I understand it, but the question that keeps ringing in my mind is when you say artificial intelligence will help us to know that there's going to be another mudslide in Bududa, there's going to be... We've seen this over and over again. Everyone I've hosted here tells me about how, oh, Kabale used to be this, now there's malaria in Kabale. Mm. Yeah. So it seems we know. What new thing is AI going to do that we don't know? So if you're talking about maybe COVID, could it have seen COVID coming? Could it, you know, are those the new things we're talking about?
When I was in medical school, every year, the Ministry of Health would release the leading causes of death in the country. And for the 5 years I was in medical school, it was malaria. Up to now, it is malaria. So I chose to work on AI in malaria. I read the Singapore story and how they eradicated malaria. Most of their work was in surveillance. Surveillance is really knowing how much there is malaria, in which place, and then also like predicting, and then they deploy the tools to prevent or treat, or and then they eradicated malaria. That was in like 1994, lots of years ago, and they did that. So there's a tool that we are developing right now, and this is how AI can be game changing, because these guys did that with old technology, and right now we have the opportunity to do it with do it more efficiently. At the point of diagnosis, you can use AI to diagnose, and the tool that we're developing is to support with diagnosis at that point. And at that point, you can now relay data in real time to a platform and know how the malaria distribution is around the country. And if you know, if you have enough data in that way, you can predict and say there's going to be an outbreak, or we think the AI, but it's more complex than that. But let's say the AI can tell you that in September there will be an outbreak in Masaka and these other places. And if you have that insight, if you are a good mayor like Ian Clark was, you will start looking for resources to now carry out a campaign to prevent that outbreak.
Mm.
You get what I'm saying? So that is how Singapore really eradicated malaria. If we have enough data like that and interventions stop coming after the outbreak, and they start coming before the outbreak, then we have a higher chance of eradicating malaria.
Are you done with your research, or is it still a work in progress?
We have a device. We have a working prototype, and this year we hope to deploy and see how the hypothesis that we have works out. But I think it works out because there's lots of people that are working on it. And
Are you in any way working with the powers that be?
The powers that be.
Do you mean the political powers that be?
Like the government.
You mean the government?
Yes, with my project, yes. We actually were looking for the Ministry of Health to use our tool. There's what they call the Malaria Indicator Survey. And they do it every year to know how much malaria is being spread out. And they were going to use it. Unfortunately, that's when Trump came into power, and that survey is not going to be done this year. So when they do it next time, probably we'll have them use our tool. Yeah.
So I don't want to go heavily into artificial intelligence and forget the focus of this. Dr. Ian, when we were speaking earlier, you said when you get changes in climate, you get changes in communicable diseases.
Mm.
Break that down for me.
Certain diseases transmit in certain circumstances. And as I said, if you've got predictability, you know, in Ireland, you know, at certain seasons, you'll get a flu epidemic or coughs and colds. But you don't get malaria because the mosquitoes don't carry the malaria parasite. So you begin to know what you're working with because of a stable environment. But if that environment changes continually, we've been talking a lot about malaria, but malaria wasn't too bad in certain parts of the country, which are at a higher altitude. Say Fort Portal, malaria wasn't bad there for many years. Now there's more malaria, and so you get this endemic diseases, which are endemic diseases, which come and go. And they change, and it can be viruses, bacteria, protozoa, all kinds of diseases that are going to affect us more. And I think also, the zoonotic diseases are an interesting one, because when you change animal patterns and they have more contact with human beings, for example, then you're more likely to get those diseases transmitted. So when you have rapidly changing conditions, then it's unpredictable. We've been talking about AI making predictions, but the fact of climate change is it brings you stuff that you didn't expect. And then you get diseases that you haven't been prepared for.
But also to add to that is that, have you ever seen a patient of cholera? You have.
On TV.
On TV. On TV. Okay. I've been in the hospital close to 8 years. I've not yet seen one. But climate change may make it, may change that people will see more patients of cholera. There have been outbreaks like 4 times over the last year. So that's how like climate change may bring back the things that we had already dealt with. And now they're back and causing extra stressors in our lives. Yeah.
Well, let's hope your research works and we take it seriously enough that it helps us predict these things and be ready. Yeah. You said earlier something about...
Sorry, can I have a point and I just carry on. Yeah, just to take it down to malaria. Another way climate change changes things is that in malaria, we have different species of parasites and mosquitoes. And we know the ones that live mostly around humans. Mm. But because of climate change, we are seeing that the different species of mosquitoes are changing their patterns.
Behavior, yeah.
We are seeing more species of mosquitoes living with humans, and they spread different diseases. An example is dengue fever. Mm. It's a different mosquito, but now it's coming to more places where it wasn't.
Why? Yeah.
Because of the changes in the habitats, because the changes in the temperatures, the changes in the rainfall, in the climate, but also I'm just going to bring out something in my work. The Plasmodium, the malaria parasite that affects us, has different species, and there's one species that affects us the most here in Uganda. Is it allowed to go in like scientific terms?
You're talking about Falciparum.
Okay, let's say there are A, B, C, and D species of the parasite that causes malaria, and A is the commonest in Uganda. Mm-hmm. And so when you get it, we don't even need to know whether it's A, B, and C. We know that drug. We know that drug. But now we are seeing that there are changes. Mm. We are seeing there's a paper that was published, and I think there's more research that is needed. And we are seeing that there's now more species C and D, and they are kind of treatment.
You can name it. I mean, people know Falciparum is the common one.
Medical people that listen. Yeah. It's not just
Falciparum is a common one. So you're saying there's more malaria and
Oval, Vivax, are rare. Yeah. And they're mostly in Brazil and other countries. Mm. But now there's a paper that was published that now we are seeing more Vivax. Mm. And we're seeing more. And Vivax treatment is different from Falciparum. Mm. So how AI supports that is our tool can make it easier to know whether it's Vivax or Falciparum. Or so that you get the exact treatment that you need.
Funding. You said that one of the ways that climate change and health are related is that funders have shifted the focus to this hot potato that is climate change and moved away from health in one way or the other. Plus, we've seen the cuts already as well. Tell me a bit more about that.
So I'll start with the one I know very well, and that's that less than 10% of our national budget goes to health, I think. Yeah, and so that means there's already a deficit. So the other amount of money that is needed or resources that are needed come from outside the country, from funders. So anything that affects that really hits hard the health sector. I've not worked a lot with funders, but I worked for an NGO. I've worked for like two NGOs, and I've seen NGOs shift their priorities because you know the way the NGO world is.
Non-government organizations.
The non-government organizations. the way they are set up is that they have to apply for grants, and those grants, the priorities of the grants are set up by the people who own the philanthropies or the people who own the foundations. And the people who own the foundations, most times their priorities are directed by what is hot cake, I should say.
Topical.
Yeah, what is topical. We saw there's a point where most philanthropies went to mental health. Yeah, it was a hot cake in COVID. And so we saw lots of mental health funding.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that money trickled down to Uganda. But
I don't know. But we saw that. And then with climate change, it's... I don't have the figures, but there's a point where we had a lot of shift in the international donations towards climate. Yes, it's a big problem. And I don't know whether it's good or bad, but there has been shift towards funding more climate change specific issues. But there's also good news. One of the NGOs I worked for, Seed Global Health, the CEO was appointed an envoy for climate change and health in the WHO just recently. So I think there is a good trajectory in that we are now seeing climate change and health being talked about together. But the real issue is the resources being from the global north. And so when they decide that now our priority is climate change, and then there's no like filters. And so when you come in with your thing and it's like TB and you want to fix it into how climate change is affected, is linked to that, it's like a no go for them. Yeah. So that's how it is.
Dr. Ian, have you seen the recent cuts from the Trump administration affect our health system and how?
Oh, I think they're definitely affecting our healthcare system. I'm not up to date to the minute as to what's happening as far as the HIV, the antiretroviral treatment drugs, are concerned. But certainly the funding was cut. What happened was they said, stop everything. And there was drugs in transit. So they said, you can receive those drugs in transit. And so they went out to the health centers. And then there was some more drugs that were ready. They couldn't cancel. They were coming in. So they came in as well. And then I think those drugs are supposed to be... So they were in Uganda. And then the Ministry of Health had to find a way of distributing them. Now, what happens beyond that, I'm not sure. Because the Ministry of Health was providing a certain amount of HIV drugs, antiretroviral drugs. So whether they're going to take over the whole program or whether some money is coming back, I don't know. But certainly one of the immediate effects of all of that is that when people are uncertain, and we mentioned uncertainty and unpredictability in relation to climate change and in relation to health, but when people are uncertain if they're going to get the drugs and so on, a lot of people, especially in rural areas, they just stop going. They say, oh, we heard there's no drugs. But they haven't even gone to the health centre to see if there's drugs. And the interruption of treatment in HIV is going to be catastrophic.
And to bring this conversation to a close, and the question that I asked the guest I had last was, if you could snap your fingers, what three things would you do for Uganda in relation to climate change and health? David, I'll start with you.
So the very first wish would be about the future, and it is with the younger people. It would be to get more people looking or studying climate change as a problem and thinking about what they can build, not just for Uganda, but for the world.
I was going to say young people looking at climate change as an opportunity.
Yes. So there's an opportunity if we can have more people. I've spoken about some things that are at the edge, like there's no exact answer. So if we can have more young people go towards the edge of climate change and health and create new answers, that's a golden opportunity for us. And if I would snap my finger and I had one chance, that is where I would put it, to the people who are in secondary, who are in primary. In a way, the entire world is a novice with climate change, and we have an opportunity to be the people who give them the right answers.
I think there's two things. One is the political will to do things. And I think that, one of the issues is we can talk in the NGO or the non-government organization world and these various spheres. But the policy is made by government, and you'd want to make sure that government is prepared to implement this kind of measures that are actually going to make a difference. But to do that, the second thing has to be made. Maybe it's the first thing would be funding. Funding and then the implementation about it, because David's been alluding to the fact that if you have a hot topic, then say you want to study TB, but the money's in climate change. You have to relate TB to climate change to get the money. So people can get the money sometimes, but then, the policies, the actual implementation is poor. So I'd like to see both the funding and the implementation at a policy level.
Yeah, my second one would be that the catastrophe that comes or the circumstances that are coming with climate change will actually drive the eradication of malaria. Mm. Because the tool I'm working on, is in line with that. And I think there is an opportunity probably for us to eradicate this disease that has killed many people. As because climate change becoming a priority for funders and malaria being a priority disease, probably we'll get more funding to malaria, more innovation to malaria, more attention to it, and not just to keep running the grant cycles, but for people to actually eradicate the disease, because it's possible. It has been done in many places. We have more tech. We have more educated people. There is no reason why we are not eradicating the disease. That would be my second. I've gotten my third one. My third one would be having positive outcomes of the systemic changes with climate change and or with the political nature of things. I hope that climate change causes people to change the way they look at education, the way they look at public health, the way they look at careers, because we are living in a time where things are changing. Yeah, so I hope that that trickles down to the other systems, and because things are changing so fast, there are higher chances of us testing out things which will fail and eventually test out things that will work.
Climate change is already doing this. You know, we've had a migration from, especially from Central and West African countries to, through the Sahel. And up, to the Mediterranean, we've had the boat people drowning and that kind of thing, which is very tragic. But it's a lot of it's driven by climate change, and there has been the greening of the Sahel. You know that program where they've been doing the different agriculture, and I think it's a big UN program. And that you can see, them driving back the desert through this program, and I think that. It's climate change that has brought a disaster, which is a disaster, a human disaster in terms of migration because of the desertification of those areas, but then bringing a solution as well to it, which everybody has got together on. And I would like to see such solutions happening and climate change driving positive change. You know, like, for example, you see David here, he's a young man. He's at the cutting edge of science and technology. Why do we not have more Davids in Uganda? I'm at the stage of my life where I'm mentoring people. I'm using my experience, hopefully, to encourage them. And I want to see young Ugandans emerge who are tackling these problems and who believe in themselves. And then I would like to see, I've had about five wishes in here, but I'd like to see the funding coming from the global north to the global south, to the bright, young, intelligent Africans here. That's what we need. You know, we need this shift from north to south.
I would really, really be happy if the response to climate change moved away from non-government organizations,
exactly,
from philanthropy, from campaigns to
policy.
People looking at it from a practical standpoint. I don't have the exact way, but maybe to look at it like a businessman,
yeah,
or
absolutely.
like look at it in terms that like there's a problem. I need to create a product for people to buy it, and then that money will go and solve the problem that I want. Because we've seen throughout the history of the world that donations have improved life, but we've left climate change to the donors, which is bad. Thank you.
Dr. David and Dr. Ian Clark, talking to me about artificial intelligence, public health, and many other aspects of how climate change is playing out in the field of public health in Uganda. You can find links to Clark International University in our show notes, as always. And if you'd like to drop us a line, we're always keen to hear what you think of the podcast. climatetalkpod@gmail.com is our address. Please do get in touch. Thanks for listening. I'm Josephine Karunji. See you next time.